Welcome back to Rotten Rewind, a podcast that reanimates the films of the past that critics beat to death with a shovel and left for dead and discarded of because they were no longer beautiful to them. If a film fails to score above the 60% threshold on RottenTomatoes.com, it's fair game for us to talk about here on this very podcast. Or I guess if it fails to meet Bruce Willis's standards, then we get to talk about it here. I'm Max Rue.
I'm still Courtney Peronto. Bruce Willis is the most Rotten Rewind actor, I think.
I feel like we didn't talk about him at all for a long time. And then this whole year has been, it's the year of Bruce.
It's the year of Bruce, yeah.
It is a big year for Bruce. And we're joined by a regular third. Just one of our favorites at this point. Kay Whelan, the co-host of oh my God, why am I blanking on the name?
Gay Wine.
Yeah, I wanted it to be something else in my head, but I was like, is it just Gay Wine?
Words.
It's just Gay Wine, right? Yeah.
We try to make it real easy.
It's deceptively simple, yeah. Because then sometimes in my head, I'm like, am I just like projecting that like title on it? Like, it's Gay Wine. It's just two gay people talking about wine.
That's exactly what it is. So we try to keep it simple.
I like that. Yeah. I don't. I guess we could have kept ours simpler, but
I don't know if I've shouted it out, but I love the name of this podcast. It's perfect.
I think it's
wow.
Fun.
Thank you. Yeah. We don't get that often enough. So
yeah, that's true. I think everyone just knows.
Yeah. We appreciate that. Today on the podcast, we're talking about a little horror comedy. Yeah. It's a little spooky. It's a little funny. It's very campy. We're talking about Robert Zemeckis's 1992, I mean, kind of a box office bomb.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Death Becomes Her, starring just a great cast.
It's crazy.
Incredible cast.
Meryl Streep, Bruce
starring
Willis.
The Banger Sisters.
And Susan Sarandon.
Starring one Banger Sister and Ricky in the Flash.
That's right. We get Ricky. We get a Banger. We get the star of Mercury Rising and the Jackal. We get Isabella Rossellini. We get a little cameo from Fabio. We get it all. This was my first time seeing Death Becomes Her.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I'd never seen it.
Oh, damn. I watched it a lot as a kid.
Same.
I feel like a lot of people did.
My 12th time seeing it.
It kind of feels like a kid's movie in a weird way.
It feels very Hocus Pocus adjacent. It makes me want to watch Hocus Pocus, the real one again. And also like the Witches of Eastwick.
You know, it shares a location with Witches of Eastwick also.
Oh, I did not.
You know, I've also never seen Witches of Eastwick.
Oh, whoa. There's some hotties in that movie, man.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. I'm a bad player. I've always wanted to watch it.
Susan Sarandon, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Cher, like at their physical.
And Nicholson is the guy in it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This has like horror tropes, but it's mostly just really funny satirical comedy.
Yeah.
Is Death Becomes Her PG or is it PG-13?
It's got to be PG-13.
Yeah,
I actually wondered if it was rated R at a certain point, but I'm pretty sure it's just PG-13.
Really?
Yeah, it's PG-13. Because
it is so goofy.
But there are some adult themes.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely would have been, if it wasn't horror, it definitely would have paired really perfectly with She-Devil for obvious reasons.
Oh, uh-huh.
I think that would have been like the perfect pairing for it.
They're very kind of similar movies in some ways.
Yeah.
I mean, they're different, but like
they both have Meryl Streep.
The tone is similar.
They're both about like what happens when women, when they like age out of like the age to be looked at by men. And I think that like this sort of streak in her career is, I think, my favorite Meryl Streep run.
Right. When she's like in her like mid-40s. She's like 43 or something like that in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. She seems to just be having a great time at this.
She looks incredible.
Period. She looks great.
You know, Isabella Rossellini is 40 in this movie.
Oh, wow.
I could have guessed that just because like she has the most incredible genes. She was actually just on the podcast Keep It this week. She is my like, I don't have couple goals. I don't have squad goals. I have just what I want to be like when I'm, I don't have squad goals. Cause I have great friends. I don't need them, but like, I do have like, oh, that's what I want to be like when I'm old goals. And I think Isabella Rossellini is number one. She just seems so entirely classy and cool and like still weird in the right way. That outfit, please get it for me.
Oh, with the necklace outfit.
Yeah, it's an outfit
of necklaces.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess that outfit alone should make it PG-13 because it is very
it's kind of crazy how much more you could get away with in a PG-13 movie. I feel like when we were younger, like there was so much more that you could push the boundaries of, or I guess you just had to be a big studio movie that could pay off the
for
NBA.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Titanic is a famously PG-13 movie with a very famous titty scene. So
yeah, it's, true. Okay. I just want to say in 1989, Meryl Streep makes She-Devil. In 1990, she makes my favorite movie, Postcards from the Edge. And then she fucking makes Defending Your Life. And then she makes this. It's just like one after another.
Yeah. It was like, so she finally got to embrace a lighter side of herself.
Yeah.
Famously, nobody thought she could do comedy.
Yeah.
So wrong. Have you seen Defending Your Life?
No, I love I Defending Your Life.
Yeah. I think it's just one of the best romantic comedies ever. But I also think Postcards from the Edge, don't look at the poster. It's a stupid poster. I think Postcards from the Edge is like the pinnacle of mother-daughter complicated relationships. Like, I think that that movie is perfect. It's like basically telling the story of, oh my gosh, who's the woman from Star Wars that just passed away?
Carrie Fisher.
Carrie Fisher, and then her mom, Debbie Reynolds. So it's like this like complicated story, gotcha, like two Hollywood women that like love each other desperately, but like can't help but fuck up a lot. Because,
do you know who co-wrote the script? Don't cheat.
I'm not. I'm going to say, what if it's Joan Didion?
No, you're not even in close.
Oh, it's someone shitty. It's like,
it's one of your favorite people.
Joss Whedon, but he's not my favorite person.
Oliver Stone.
Oh, fuck
oh hell
me.
Yeah.
That's so weird that he co-wrote that movie.
She's in a great period with this one for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so is Goldie Hawn. I didn't realize
how little Goldie Hawn worked after this. Like, it was basically this. Yeah. She does the Woody Allen movie, Everyone Says I Love You, the First Wives Club. Yeah, she does the Banger Sisters like a few years later, but then she's done for like 14 years and she comes back for the Amy Schumer movie, Snatched.
That's
only
crazy.
Amy
I've
Schumer can
that.
Bring me out of retirement.
I mean, I think that we'll get into it. Like, I do think that like Goldie Hawn is one of those actresses sort of like on Affairs or something that just like never really got her due at all. Like even less than.
Even though she won an Oscar early in her career. And then she won an Oscar for one of her first movies.
Oh,
she was nominated for Private Benjamin, but she won for...
I feel like I will say, I think she's a little bit more of a beloved household name than Anna Faris, though. I think that Anna Faris is sort of like a lot of like on a low key level, like Anna Faris is a lot of people's favorite, but like she's nowhere near the same like kind of household name.
Yeah, I guess it's more like she also there was, I think, better parts for an actress like Goldie Hawn at that time. Like there was the romantic comedy and I think the screwball comedy things that she was so good at were obviously more popular.
Oh my god, Overboard, that movie is sick. It's so good.
Didn't Anna Faris do the remake?
Yeah, she did.
She did. She won the Oscar in 1970 for a movie called Cactus Flower.
Oh, okay.
I've never seen
with that. Walter Matthau and Ingrid Bergman. It's like her first movie pretty much, and she wins the Oscar for it.
But I feel like she's like been asked to just play like the like bimbo for
of course
for 10 years. Whereas like I think one of like the coolest things about Death Becomes Her is it almost like like you would assume that Goldie Hawn would play the Meryl Streep character and vice versa. And I think like that's what's so brilliant about its setup that I guess we should get into.
No. It's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart.
Some people will go to any length to stay young forever.
Is that someone?
It's Madeline Ashton. Oh, she was a big star in the 60s.
I thought she was dead.
Oh, madam, you look younger every day.
Thank you, Rose.
But Madeline Ashton and her old friend, Helen Sharp.
I've lost men to her before.
Are about to go too far.
A touch of magic. Drink that potion, and you'll never grow even one day older.
Bottoms up.
No warning.
Now a warning?
Siempre viva! Live forever!
Ernest, I'm in the morgue. They think I'm dead.
You are. But you're not.
Are you telling me it doesn't hurt when I do this?
It doesn't hurt.
She's dead!
She's dead, Ernest.
Now he's dead.
He's dead? Ernest is dead? Everybody's dead!
Universal Pictures presents Meryl Streep, Bruce Willis.
It's a miracle!
And Goldie Hawn. Death Becomes Her.
I feel like it's incredibly well cast. Speaking of that, like, you would think, but that's honestly like part of what makes it such good casting is that it kind of flips the script a little bit on what mm-hmm. their types should, or like quote unquote should be.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, when she's in that like grotesque kind of like mental institution period, I was like, damn, it's almost like too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a little much.
It's probably like the most cringy thing about the movie, but it's over pretty quickly. And it is kind of funny.
But she kind of tore that. Like, she kind of did a good job.
No, she was great.
I think I didn't realize that that was a part of the movie. And I was like, how long is she going to look like this? Like, how long are they going to keep this one going for? Oh, I thought it was, I don't know. Listen, like, fat jokes are obviously a lot more popular in the 90s. So I was like, are they going to ride this one out?
Yeah,
like,
we put Courtney Cox in a fat suit for like two flashback episodes a season on Friends. Like,
yeah, I mean, I didn't know if we were going to get like a fat bastard situation with her. So
Concerned. Yeah, no, thankfully not. It is really fucked up though that like the it's like her weight is like the equivalent of like her mental illness. Like,
I know.
It's
a 1992 film.
Yeah, it's directed by Robert Zemeckis and written by two guys, Martin Donovan and David Koepp, who's just gone on to become one of the highest paid screenwriters ever.
Oh,
one of Spielberg's go-to guys that I guess at the time he was, an up-and-coming writer. He was really broke. They had pitched this movie as like a low-budget camp horror-esque movie. And I guess he pitched it as it was meant to be Night of the Living Dead if George Cukor directed it. That was what they wanted.
George Cukor is one of my favorite directors of all time.
Yeah, I guess at the time they were like thinking it was going to be a modestly budgeted movie. It somehow got, into the hands of Universal and became a $50 million Robert Zemeckis movie. You know, him coming off of the Back to the Future movies. He'd just done three of them back to back. Well, he also did Roger Rabbit.
That must be fresh, right? People love that thing.
I
found it as a child. That's sort of like, I don't know if it would bother me now, but like as a child, things like Roger Rabbit, like I think it was like, now we have the vocabulary to say like it existed in that uncanny valley that I felt really uncomfortable with. The number one thing was the show Dinosaurs. Get that show away from me. Not the mama. Goodbye.
Have you ever seen the series finale of Dinosaurs?
No.
It's notoriously bleak.
Do they die?
Because I have seen this.
It's really bleak.
I mean, but how could you not make it that?
I know. It's just funny that they were like, let's kill them. There's a lot of Zemeckis movies I haven't seen because I'm not the biggest Zemeckis guy, even though I think Roger Rabbit is technically the first movie I ever saw.
Really?
Yeah.
What year is it?
It was the year I was born. My mom went to go see it right before I was born. So she always thinks of it as like, oh yeah, I saw Roger Rabbit. And then
you love Romancing the Stone, don't you?
I've never seen Romancing the Stone.
Oh
my God. Kathleen Turner at her finest.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean.
She has so many finest.
Yeah, I was going to say it. Never mind.
I haven't seen the Back to the Future sequels. I've only seen part one.
Oh, I've seen them both.
Yeah.
I'm not that into those movies, honestly.
Yeah.
I do love Roger Rabbit. And I feel like I grew up watching both Roger Rabbit and Death Becomes Her kind of like in the same, they occupy kind of a similar like,
right.
Okay, pop this VHS in kind of era for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And then his filmography post Forrest Gump is weird.
It is. It's funny that he goes from Death Becomes Her to Forrest Gump and then wins an Oscar for it.
He does What Lies Beneath, which is another good PG-13 horror movie. No, he did
Contact, which I've yet to see. I know a lot of people love Contact.
Yeah. The Polar Express, another uncanny
valley. Yeah, then he just becomes stuck in his
Tom Hanks era.
Mm-hmm. And he has Pinocchio coming out very soon.
No, it's out.
It's out?
Yeah, it's out. It's apparently terrifying. Did the Horrible Witches remake with Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Welcome to Marlin, which we
Pinocchio
have
Pinocchio is straight up terrifying. Like, I
Pinocchio
reread
is one of the scariest ones.
I was like, wait, why do I remember this movie being, like, really scary? Like, the cartoon.
And they then get I eaten by a fucking whale.
Well, and there's, like, a weird, like, child labor thing
happening. He gets turned into a fucking donkey.
I just remember the ride at Disneyland scared the shit out of me.
It's like he lied.
I don't remember Castaway. I don't want to say it's a bad movie because I don't really remember it. I'm sure Hanks is great in it. I fucking hate Flight. I think Flight is really bad.
I've never seen
one of my least favorite Denzel movies. That's the one where he's an alcoholic who flies the plane upside down. It's like Sully if Sully was an alcoholic. He has to go testify before Congress and they're like, asking him all these questions, and he finally breaks down. He's like, it's because I drink. And he just starts talking about how he's an alcoholic. It's fucking crazy. It's so bad. Every time John Goodman comes on screen, they play Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones as if that was a good idea. But yeah, Zemeckis has had a pretty crazy career. It feels like he's kind of testing the waters for what he's going to do in the 2000s with Roger Rabbit and this movie. It's funny that I hadn't seen this movie because it does remind me of the stuff that I was really into when I was a kid, like the Tim Burton movies, like these kind of...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You know, like darkly comedic gothic. I don't even know how to describe it. It's almost like, I don't know, it just has like a Burton vibe to it that I feel
like...
Well,
it's also pretty slapsticky.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's also a very visual movie in the same way that some of those Tim Burton movies are. I know it's not this house, but like the mansion, it's like some house in like San Marino or something, but the mansion right. where Madeline and whatever Bruce Willis's character's name is, where they live, I thought it was like the Sunset Boulevard house, like the way they have that kind of like gothic like staircase right. thing. I mean, it's not that house, but it's like it's like that the whole like visual of the movie is like this evocative, really like gothic LA thing.
Yeah, it's kind of campy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like camp goth for sure.
And like unlike Tim Burton, I do think that like this movie's like saving grace, or like something that I like about it is that like it's one, specifically feminine, even though it's directed by a man, but two, I think that it never takes itself seriously.
I feel like I wish it took itself a little more seriously because there are some like really interesting themes that I think could have been fleshed out more. Like one of the reasons I feel like, you know, I was saying earlier, it seems like a kid's movie. It's so simple in the way it kind of goes like plot point, plot point, plot point. And it is visual, like you're saying, kind of like slapsticky. Like I feel like there's so much more that they could have done with the material. It's like, it's literally about like mortality, the gravity of these choices that these women are making, but also about like female aging and like beauty and all these, like there's so much more to it that they could have
I
think you have to trick people into seeing this movie.
Yeah,
you know, like unfortunately, like at the time I feel like you almost need to like trick people into being like, oh yeah, that is kind of fucked up. By the end, I really like the finale, that they're just sort of like old biddies together.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like the themes kind of took shape a little bit more in the second half. They seemed to kind of bubble up to the surface a little bit more. I think my only like major issue with it was that I do think it could have taken itself a little more seriously at times. The pacing of it is really strange to me. It feels like it climaxes a few times.
Yeah.
And then just kind of keeps going. Like I just kept thinking that certain parts were going to be the end and then it never was. So that was like a little weird. Like the whole second half of the movie feels like a climax that just kind of gets delayed. Yeah, I guess like, I don't know. And then yeah, some of the Goldie Hawn stuff in the beginning is like, you know, dated and
yeah, that stuff not was a great. Little cringy.
No, it was whatever. Yeah, it was a bomb at the time. I mean, it didn't do like horribly at the box office. It obviously didn't get good reviews, but even the reviews are like, they're not horrible, but they are very much just this thing of like, they have no idea what's to come. But like just talking about how the whole movie is so fixated on visual effects seems to like put the story second, essentially. I guess it's also at the time, yeah, like it was pretty groundbreaking VFX work that took a lot of work and money. So yeah, and Zemeckis is a guy who's always been fucking fixated on shit like that. But I'm like, you have no idea how fucking weird he's about to get. wait till you see Welcome to Marwen. The movie has obviously aged like really well.
Yeah.
And I assumed this was a part of it while watching it and then researching it. And obviously it was true, but it is obviously a huge queer cult movie. There was an article written about 5 years ago in Vanity Fair called The Gloriously Queer Afterlife of Death Becomes Her, that just goes into like how the movie has endured and like seems to have been kept alive by queer audiences in a lot of ways. Like that's how it sustained itself and like became a cult movie, which is so interesting because it's written by two straight men, it's directed by Zemeckis. It's not a movie that maybe seemed to have that in mind obviously while making it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like not just the camp element, but sort of like the themes that it's dealing with in a campy way make a lot of sense. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think that one of the beautiful things about camp is that when it's done best, it's done unintentionally. And so I think that it being made by the people it was made by is sort of to its benefit in a weird way. Like, it's like the way that the visuals and stuff kind of contribute, it almost seems like by accident. But yeah, the drama of these women, it's on its face, it's about the affections and the gaze of this man, but it actually what it's really is about themselves a lot more than it, like, and each other more than it is about, why do I keep forgetting Bruce Willis's character? Ernest. So I feel like there is a lot to be said. I mean, like, I don't know off the top of my head if it passes the Bechdel test, but I kind of feel like it does.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to, I also think at least with Rosalini and Street.
Yeah. I think it does a lot more. It is like a movie about like a love triangle to some degree, but it's also not actually about that at all.
Yeah, because I think their backstory is like so interesting and fucked up. And like, I think of it more like, I don't know, to me, it feels like more like Whatever Happened to Baby Jane in a way, or like the story about these two people that have like a long rivalry. And I like that about it. To me, I would love to watch this against something like Baby Jane, because they do have almost like a Bette Davis, Joan Crawford, fuck you, like one-upmanship. And I think like that's what makes the movie interesting.
Well, there's that whole scene between the two of them when they're finally kind of like reckoning with what their beef, you know? And it's like, the part of the root of it was like Meryl Streep's character stealing Goldie Hawn's boyfriends. But like, that was ultimately because she was hurt that Goldie Hawn thought she was like trashy, or she's cheap. But like, it's about their relationship and what they think about each other, as opposed to like actually being about this, like wanting to get a man thing.
I love that. And I love that Ernest is kind of an afterthought by the end of it. And also I love that Ernest isn't even like cartoonishly villainous. He's just kind of lame. He's just kind of like a fucking lame drunk. And like, and it gets to a point where you're like, this is all over this guy.
Yeah, like when Goldie really Hawn's trying to get him back, it's like, for this guy, she's like, look at you. And like, that's the joke, is that he looks like shit.
Yes.
It's really, really funny.
Yeah, and before he pushes Streep down the stairs, I love when she's just calling him flaccid.
You're a tragic, boozy, flaccid clown.
Watch what you say, Mel. I don't have to take this any longer.
Oh yeah, you'll take it. You'll take everything I have to give. You always have.
Fucking Bruce Willis is so good in this.
He really is.
He wasn't the first choice for it. They wanted
someone more obvious, because like he's kind of a dumb cuck here.
They wanted Kevin Kline. Kevin Kline turned it down because they didn't offer him enough money. And then they talked about Jeff Bridges and somebody else I can't remember. But I think Willis is so perfect for it. It's such an unexpected bit of casting, especially at that time. Like, this is in Die Hard era Willis. He's so fucking funny in this. His physicality is great. I laugh so fucking hard when they're trying to get him to take the potion and he's throwing his drink around. And then finally, like when he's like going down the stairs and they hit him over the head with the vase and he just turns around and goes, what?
Yeah.
He's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the three of them are great. Obviously, Streep is.
There's one line that she delivers where it's like when she goes to like the young man's house that she's been fucking, and she's like, is there someone there? And he was like, no. And then he's like stuttering, and she's like, at least lie quickly. And he's like, I'm trying.
Yes.
This fucking scene, this is a fucking scene. Yeah, I just think that she is just like so funny. She makes it look effortless, and I think that's why some people don't think of her as a comedic actress, but like, she's so fucking funny.
Well, I think that's what it is. It's like a movie like this and She-Devil, like especially after Don't Look Up, which we talked about a little bit, obviously we talked about a couple months ago, and then we brought up during She-Devil, where like, I don't think she's very good in it. She's one of my least favorite parts of it, which is weird because she's 100% so fucking funny.
My least favorite part.
But like, you see something like this in She-Devil and you're like, oh yeah, you are incredible. Not that you need to be reminded of that necessarily, but like, I don't know, you do sometimes take for granted how good she is.
Micro expressions and all of these things. Like, she really.
No, every note is perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
I would say the same about Han.
Yeah. I think Street part is more fun to play. Like,
Han, that's what I was going to say. Like, I think that Goldie Hawn in some ways has the hardest part because she has to like be kind of pathetic. Like she, I don't know. She has to be.
She's kind of the straight man of the whole thing, which is funny because even Willis gets to just be like a fucking loser. And play up.
Getting his like his Bloody Mary in the morning and then like throwing the like celery stalk out of it. Like, just like he gets all these like funny little moments.
Yeah.
And Goldie Hawn has to be like, I mean, she makes it funny. Like Even with the like little towel ringing and stuff, like she gets all these like little bits to like really work it.
She has that great line too, where she's talking to him when she's like, when she does the like reverse thing after she tells Meryl Streep, I know, I never thought it was your fault. I always thought it was his. And then she goes to him and was like, I know it was hers. She says, she's a woman, Ernest, from Newark, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Just great. The three of them are so fucking good. I love that he doesn't take the potion. And when he doesn't take it, he has like the best reasoning for it, which is, he's just like,
I don't want to live forever. Like, everyone that I love will die.
Yeah, there's that. And then he's like, what if I get bored?
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is like kind of so true. It's just like, I would be bored. I would be like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. No, he really spells it out, which I almost like have some, like, I kind of wish that it wasn't like quite so spelled out. But like, yeah, he has great reasons for it. And then he falls off a building.
Yeah.
And then survives and then goes on to live a long, fruitful life. Where, like, yeah.
Oh, his
like,
funeral
beloved.
Scene is so fucking
fun. So good.
Yeah. Like them just as old biddies, like laughing at his funeral in the back. I was like, so what a funny. Fucking tight
well,
ending.
And she's got the like Joan Crawford eyebrows that you can yeah. see through the veil. I was like, this is amazing. I mean, all the makeup in this movie is incredible.
Mm-hmm. It's really good.
Goldie Hawn's like perfect lip mm-hmm. at like post transformation is just like all of her makeup is so good. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Meryl too. Like, what did they give them? Like colored contacts or something? Like that was
it. Gave Goldie
the contacts when she dies. Yeah, so yeah. she almost looks like a zombie.
I feel like yeah. Meryl had like almost purpley. What does she have? Like violet eyes though. Like,
oh, I'm
they
sure.
probably
no, I'm
do
sure.
something.
They
to
probably
too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because she think... looks otherworldly. Also, I love that scene when they like when Goldie Hawn has the hole in her stomach.
Yeah.
And
when you watch Meryl Streep get up from the stairs. After mm-hmm. like she's dead, like in right. the background, like I think that's really it's
oh
like,
my god, that
it's probably
amazing.
Like the scariest part of the movie, but it's like not scary at all. It's just really not funny, scary. And then they go to the yeah. hospital, and I like what a dumb cuck like Bruce Willis is because like he's like set on going through with the plan on killing her, mm-hmm. and then once she's like alive, even though she should be dead or alive seeming, he's like it's like God's intervention. We have to be together. It's just like yeah. God, dude, you just like. So like you just have no
yeah
integrity.
It's not even that yeah. he sees that like she looks younger again.
No,
he's just fixated on the fact that she survived. And then I yeah obviously you get a great scene with Sidney Pollack as the doctor
yeah
the
he's
hospital,
funny
which is great.
I need to get a second opinion.
Yeah and then yeah. he dies.
So good.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, her characterization in that scene was sick. Like when she's got yeah. the like thermometer in her mouth and like
yeah.
she does look
dead
and you're
yeah,
just kind of like
yeah he's like this doesn't hurt you at all. In that Vanity Fair article, they interviewed one of the Drag Race winners, Jarek Poffer, said, you don't normally see a movie with two heavily made up women sword fighting with shovels and calling out catty retorts as they just decimate each other. I don't know. It's just yeah. so campy and over the top that it's like, how could this not have been made for drag queens?
Yeah, no, it's and the makeup too. I mean, yeah,
oh,
the,
yeah.
yeah, everything.
I guess Meryl Streep like reflected on the movie like 15 years later and was like, or 20 years later and was basically like, oh yeah, I knew this was going to be like a gay classic when I made it. Like she was like, I don't know how you could sing that opening musical number and not know that.
Oh my God, it's literally a Tennessee Williams play. Like,
yeah,
period.
Yeah, yeah, she was like, oh, I knew it as soon as I was doing that. But I guess she did have a really not great time making the movie. Like she was, I think, like loved everybody she worked with, but she had never done like a CGI heavy movie at the time. And then I guess she kind of vowed to not ever do that again. Mm-hmm. And I guess she's probably one of the few actors who can probably vow to do that at this point.
Yeah,
because she was just like, it was just so tedious. Like she was just like, she's like, I'm not going to act across, you know, a fucking broomstick and pretend it's Goldie
right.
Hawn and like do all this shit. She was just like at the time, like, which is funny because yeah, obviously that's the fucking norm now.
Right.
To act across, you know, from a tennis ball on a green screen, which yeah is like incredibly difficult. So yeah, it's like you can write off a lot of the actors in movies like that, but it's also like that's really hard.
That's hard.
Yeah, that
that's
is
hard work, man. But yeah, I didn't realize that Goldie Hawn also just didn't work for a long time. I guess this also could have been paired with the First Wives Club too, and a non.
I do think so. The First Wives Club is a great.
Wait, is it rotten?
Yes,
it might be.
It
yeah.
is, yeah,
people.
No.
This is peak people being
so
like.
Perfect.
I know, but this is peak people like hating women's thing.
My stepmom took me to see that movie opening weekend when I was 8 years old. I don't know why.
That's bizarre.
But I saw that opening
bizarre
weekend.
Choice.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I guess
it
I'll go.
It opens with a suicide. Of what's
this kid likes movies. I'll take him to see the First Wives Club. Okay. I guess they're reuniting for a movie called A Childhood History Plan. It's Bette Midler, Diane Keaton, and Goldie Hawn.
And it has
my
money.
God.
It's written by someone named Peter Hoare.
Okay.
Unfortunate last name. Not spelt whore, obviously, but maybe it's Hoare. I don't know.
I think the First Wives Club would be a sick group Halloween costume.
It would be. That's also a remake that I would actually be excited about.
Me
too. Like, I'm not, I mean.
Yeah,
I'm,
it's one of those plots that's always.
Because I think that one movie called The Other Women that was terrible, starring like Kate Upton. Cameron Diaz
in the Cassavetes movie, yeah.
And Leslie Mann was trying to be a contemporary version of that.
Oh,
and
weird.
It is awful. Nicki Minaj is in it. Let's put it that way. Nicki Minaj has a cameo.
Oh, I forgot Goldie Hawn has two bombs in the late 90s. She does The Out of Towners with Steve Martin.
Oh, whatever.
Totally forgot about that one. And then a movie that I don't think we need to cover, but it's like one of the like most notorious bombs because it just like derailed so many people's lives and careers. It's a movie that you would have never even remembered. It's called Town and Country. It was a Warren Beatty passion project.
Oh boy.
It was shot in the late 90s. It didn't get released till 2001. It's basically like a screwball romantic comedy. It's Warren Beatty, Diane Keaton, Annie McDowell, Gary Shandling, Goldie Hawn, and randomly an early Josh Hartnett performance. But this movie was like, I guess it kept costing more. It's like a romantic comedy and it ended up costing like over $100 million because of Warren Beatty's like vanity.
Oh my God.
And it was just like and it's apparently horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it might be that was the last movie that she did besides Banker Sisters.
Okay. Yeah. I do want to say shout out one final thing that she does in this movie. One of my maybe favorite parts of the script is like when she's like trying to get Bruce Willis back and she just says sex in his ear like 10 times.
Oh my God.
It's amazing. She's like, sex. Sex. I was like, this
she's
is
like,
fucking
I used to be a woman who couldn't say the word sexual. And you're like, oh my God, please don't do it again.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like, I just think that her in that scene is like one of the funniest things ever.
She's so good in it.
My only other note is that Goldie Hawn, like her character, gets the original revenge body. So
that is true. That is true. She dedicates her life to a revenge body. You know, a movie was rotten for a little bit and now it's just barely fresh that I was surprised by is Shampoo.
Oh.
Oh, crazy.
Okay.
I don't love Shampoo, but
I don't love Shampoo. I like this more than Shampoo.
Yeah, The First Wives Club is rotten though. Has a 49%.
Yeah. Damn, that's a...
That Overboard is rotten.
Oh, what? Overboard is rotten?
Got a 44%.
Oh, my God, you gotta do it. Please bring me on for that. I've watched it one million times.
Kurt Russell's in it, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Speaking, I mean, that is probably...
We love a good kidnap movie. We love a good... You fall in love.
They're probably the best couple, right?
Oh, my God.
They have to be the best couple.
Good. The scene
like,
when...
They
the
seem like they just have so much fun.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, my God, absolutely.
Wait, wasn't it them that like, was it like Kate Hudson or whatever, like showed like a video that they like took for her and they're like, okay, well, daddy wants to say hi. And it's like Kurt Russell. And it's like, fuck you. That seems amazing.
Yeah. You know, cool would be if Kurt Russell was your dad. Hey. Yeah.
Especially now with his crazy, like father time beard and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like
he's yeah. He's just playing yeah, Santa
they play
Claus
Mr.
and Netflix
Mrs.
movies.
They both do. She
yeah,
plays
she's doing
Mrs.
those.
Claus.
Those
yeah,
movies
I know.
Are both fresh.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. Yeah. They have to be among the top echelon of couples for sure.
I love that Kurt Russell is just doing Christmas movies and Fast and Furious movies. That's just like his whole thing now.
The last super good movie I feel like he was in was Death Proof. He's so good in that.
Oh,
he's great in Death Proof. I mean, he's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's got a small part in that.
Oh, true. I forgot about that.
And then Furious 7.
He's working.
We just talked about him in Vanilla Sky. That was like an interesting, I think, use of him.
But wait, I don't remember what he...
He's the doctor. He's the psychiatrist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. He looks all rugged and handsome.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah.
He's great, man. And I mean, come on. Wyatt Russell is their kid. Just a fucking another underused actor that should just be like a leading man and isn't for some reason.
Does it hurt when I do this?
No.
Doesn't?
Mm-mm.
How about this?
Nope.
Okay. This?
No. Mm-mm.
This doesn't hurt?
Mm-mm. No.
Are you telling me it doesn't hurt when I do
this?
It
doesn't hurt. I told you that.
Uh-huh. Okay, what's this you're talking about with your neck?
Well, it hurts when I kind of turn it, you know?
Maybe you just do... Oh! Okay. Right, I see. Gotcha.
Oh. Shock. What about shock? Maybe you should...
It could be shock.
Check for shock.
Could be shock.
So Death Becomes Her, as we said, has a 54%, 61% audience score.
It's gonna become fresh within the next 5 years, I bet.
I don't know. It's been down there for a while. I don't know. Let's see. Steve Purcell, the Tampa Bay Times, said Death Becomes Her is a comedy so dark and disjointed that not even some terrific makeup effects can cover its blemishes. Jay Boyar of the Orlando Sentinel said, one of the most heartless mainstream pictures ever made. That's why it's tight. This was when dark comedies really were like actually getting made by major studios. Mm-hmm. Jay Carr of the Boston Globe said, in short, the film lacks the social context that would have enabled Death Becomes Her to take on invigorating breath and bite. It needs more of the malicious zest that Streep's character has. Its last half is as hollow as its first half is funny.
I'm a little bit on board with that, honestly.
Yeah. I think that's partially true, for sure.
Yeah.
Owen Gleiberman of Entertainment Weekly said the trouble with Death Becomes Her isn't that its comic vision is too dark, but that it has no shadings, no acerbic glee. Zemeckis gives nastiness such a hard sell, he forgets to take any delight in it.
Hmm.
And this is just like a weird one that this is a recent review from Kevin Carr of Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yikes.
Kevin Carr said, this is a 100% Hollywood story. It's not relatable to the average person.
What? No, this is not.
That's so funny.
Yeah. That's tight, actually.
I just want to know more about Fat Guys at the Movies, to be honest. Some of the newer critics that come up, we have Fat Guys at the Movies, Movie Bitches. Yikes. Who are these people?
Oh, man.
I write for Fat Guys at the Movies and Movie Bitches. Anyway, that's going to be our new caffeinated Clint is Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yeah.
Who's everyone's MVP for Death Becomes Her?
This one's really hard.
It is really hard.
I think I'm going to say Goldie, but I don't think there's the wrong answer. I don't even think Isabella would be a wrong answer. I think she's really captivating. But I think I'm going to pick Goldie Hawn.
The guy who plays Jim Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
And Elvis. No. I think for me, Meryl, partially, I think knowing that she was having such a hard time, but also just like her doing something that was so different for her and tearing it. Like, I thought she did such a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's probably Meryl, even though I'm kind of tempted to give it to Bruce Willis because he is so.
He's so funny.
It's just such a rare example of just like how broadly funny he could be. Because obviously he can do like that kind of seasoned dry bitterness that you see in a lot of action movies, and he's great at that. But it was just like fun to see someone be like, oh yeah, let's cast Bruce Willis in this part. I don't know. He just seems to be having a great time. Everyone's final rating? I'm going to say cult
it's classic. This is a cult classic if there ever once one.
It's a cult classic.
Yeah.
One last quote from writer David Koepp. He said, you can't really underestimate the entertainment value of two women swinging shovels at each other. And the other writer said, I could invent some excuse, but deep down in my heart, I don't know. He mused that the gay community is often attracted to tales of struggle and resilience about people who are never giving up, even if it's a mess.
Period.
Two straight white struggling writers. I don't know. I mean, fuck it. That's cool. We made this for you.
Yeah, it's made me want to watch Baby Jane again really, really bad. I love women fighting.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Women be fighting. In this economy, they can't be shopping, so they got to be fighting. So we're going to keep them fighting. Yeah, if you want to watch Death Becomes Her, though, you can watch it on Showtime. Anytime. Yeah. That's the app. Showtime. Anytime. Apparently, this was one of the first movies that was released on DVD that had a horrible transfer that everybody was like, what the fuck happened to this
really?
Movie? Yeah, apparently it looks insanely bad. Like, they like fogged it up. But yeah, you can watch it on Showtime where it looks fine. Looks totally solid. And then next week, we're talking about a real fun one. We're talking about a little movie called Hollow Man.
A real fun one?
real fun one. We are talking about...
Is it streaming?
It is streaming on HBO Max.
Okay.
Or you own it on Blu-ray like me.
Is our generation's most likable celebrity couple in this ilk, would it be Isla Fisher and Sacha Baron Cohen?
They're not quite at the same level. I think we need to go back to the drawing board on that one.
Okay.
And I think I like her
Well,
more
it
than
sure
him.
Isn't. Me too. I'm on a website now looking at current like people that have been together a long time. I'm like,
it's Mia Goth Timberlake. And Shia LaBeouf.
No.
That is love. That is a true testament to love. She said, I'll take you back. I'll have your kid. We'll get married. Don't worry about it. Will you fucking forgive me? It's not Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde.
No,
it is. I mean, Freddie Prinze and Sarah Michelle Gellar seem pretty happy.
It's not Nick Jonas and Priyanka Chopra. They seem happy. They seem cool. I just think that he's not cool, and I think she's cool.
Yeah, yeah. I guess if you announce the Academy Award nominations, then you've made it as a couple.
Yeah, it's not Rita Ora and what's his name?
Oh,
YTT.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Wait. Daniel Craig and Rachel Weisz.
Only because she dumped Darren Aronofsky for him on the set of a movie called Dream House that no one saw.
I love that.
Karen Aronofsky, what? Yeah, I don't know if there are any other great
ones. You know who low-key, one of my favorite couples is Paul Bettany and...
Jennifer Connelly. Didn't a bunch of shit come out for him, though, in the Johnny Depp trials because they're friends, so they had to read a bunch of text messages they had together?
Yeah.
Oh,
and Paul Bettany was like, don't fucking bring me into this shit. Don't fucking put that on TV.
No, you're like...
Wait, Ryan Gosling and Eva Mendes.
She doesn't work anymore, but
she's coming back. Okay. He's letting her out.
Then
he said, you can leave.
It's Kirsten Bell and Dax Shepard. I'm just kidding.
Fuck that. No. I'm looking at a list of the most popular celebrity couples, and one of them is Chris Brown and Rihanna.
Yikes.
Yeah, no, you have to put 20.
These are goals.
Oh, actually, Aesop and Rihanna are probably my favorite lesbian couple.
Good one. Okay, what about Alicia Keys and Swiss Beatz? Like, they
I didn't even know that was a thing.
They've been married forever. It's not fucking John Legend.
No.
I think the best
CIA couple is definitely John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. They are definitely the best CIA-funded couple. They're definitely up to something really shady. All right, guys, I got it. Final one. Josh Duhamel and Fergie.
They're broken up.
What? No. Josh? You can't do that to Josh.
It's Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani.
Gavin Rosdale and Gwen Stefani?
No, Blake Shelton.
That's actually a good pick.
No, I don't like them.
I kind of like Nicole Kidman's life, just living in, where does
Me
she live?
Me too, I like that.
Yeah, Kentucky or something.
Oh, fuck. You guys, I got it. Javier Bardem.
Oh.
And Penelope Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely the most beautiful.
That's actually the legit one.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they probably have like incredible sex. They're both really hot. Pussy.
It's up there with like Eva and Ryan. It's like those two are like.
Yeah, I think we can close the book on that one. Yeah,
I think that's
we're
good.
Done.
I think we'll see how long Ben and J-Lo can stay together for, because if they can make it last, that is love coming full circle.
It's love eternal right there.
Exactly. Well, thank you for listening. Kate, just remind people where they can find you. Remind them.
You can find me at Gay Whalen, GayWhalen, where me and Sam Zimmon do a tickling little podcast about wine and gay things and industry at large.
Can't remember the name of it, just know it's simple. It's gay wine. It's just gay
it's
wine.
Gay wine.
It's what your mind is telling you it is. It is gay wine.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Please follow Kay. If you're listening, on Patreon. Thank you so much for subscribing and being so loyal to us. Thank you for listening.